Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:15 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 9th. China today released some supply from their strategic reserve. That was the first time ever they've done that, and it took about $1.30 off the price of Brent crude. So increasingly there's resistance around the $80 level. On the one hand, we can see that every time prices rise a bit, then OPEC gets some pressure from some of its members to try and increase supply. At the same time, consumers get a bit antsy and they start complaining about the rising prices and price gouging. So then it seems to be that there's a happy medium somewhere between about the $65 and $75 area, where nobody's especially happy but not especially discomfited either. So it looks increasingly likely that we're going to have to see a significant supply shock in order to see prices sustainably above the $80 area. And there is certainly a rolling around characteristic here. Of course, it could be completely countermanded by an upper dynamic in the next day or two. But I think investors will increasingly be looking at support to be found somewhere in the region of the trend mean if they're to continue to support the trend. But the problem for for anyone who thinks that we're in a new oil-led bull market is that there's no shortage of oil. So when we think about the prognostications that the US is close to peak growth, well, peak growth is obviously then something that happens before you get peak productivity, but we're not there yet. And then there's still a lot of oil that's held off the market on behalf of OPEC and Russia. So we're still a fair way away from the kind of supply constraints that will eventually result from the inhibition on exploration, because the major oil companies are no longer spending money on big drilling projects. They've found a lot of oil in the last decade and they're just busy with exploiting it. They're not going offshore. A lot of the offshore oil companies and particularly the offshore drillers have gone bust, and they're basically being retooled to build floating wind turbines. So that obviously is going to create a difficult environment eventually, particularly when the oil market rebalances. And we're just not quite there yet, because the global economy is still recovering from the pandemic. Well, I think Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil is probably thinking that he has been cursed by the pandemic. So he is up for election in a year, and he's beginning to attack the independence of the judiciary. Well, I've often talked about standards of governance with regard to China and the lack of an independent judiciary. It's also one of the, despite all the other challenges that South Africa has, and there are plenty of them, at least they still have an independent judiciary. And now you have the president of Brazil attacking the judiciary and attacking the electoral process. So he's obviously worried that he's going to lose the next election, and that his hardcore of followers, which is probably somewhere around 25 to 30% of the population, won't be enough to carry him in the presidential campaign. So the stock market is pulling back. It was down again in here today. And the Brazilian real is also still under some pressure, although it was a little bit steadier today. But it's going to have to sustain a move through 5 in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So not only does Brazil have the pandemic to contend with, but then there's also the pressure that's coming to bear because of the drought. And with higher electricity costs, and then obviously not just the higher electricity costs, because there's less water in the hydro facilities, but also because they have to import natural gas. So US natural gas continues to head higher, and it was up another 10 cents in here today, and it's now through the $5 area. Well, it's been quite a while since we've seen natural gas at $5, and the last time was back in 2014, and that occasion did not last very long. When we then think about the even tighter situation that's evident in the UK, well, spot electricity prices are rocketing higher, and the gas price is continuing to accelerate higher. And this is a really quite profound change. We've never seen an acceleration in natural gas prices, at least on these futures, before that comes anywhere close to this, although the period in 2005 might be the only logical comparison. It's also worth considering that once these supply bottlenecks are cleared, prices give up all of the advance. So it would be quite likely that once this acceleration ends, we're going to see the price coming back down into the 20 to 40 area. So just how quickly the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is commissioned and how much volume can be sent through it is going to be a big determining factor in bringing down European natural gas prices. But of course, this is also contributing to inflationary pressures. And most particularly, it's contributing to a sense that inflation is getting out of control. But we also then have plenty of other examples where prices have surged higher and then come straight back down again. So palladium is, I think, a potential future example of that. We had this incredible decline back in 2020, and subsequently the price rebounded and pushed on to a new all-time high, and tested the psychological 3,000 level in May, and then pulled back to the trend mean, rebounded, failed to keep going, dropped below the trend mean, encountered resistance last week in the region of the trend mean. It's also broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So this is a completing top formation. We had an acceleration, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, a lengthy period of right-hand extension, and now it's breaking downwards. And there's at least a solid rationale on both the demand and the supply side. Well, on the demand side, it's because the lack of semiconductors is resulting in automotive factories closing. So there is less demand for catalytic converters if they're not making cars. And then the price will obviously have less support. But then we also have the fact that nickel prices are pushing on the upside. And we have not seen nickel trading out at this level since 2014. And I think it is worth also looking at the LME price for nickel and not just the ETF because it is coming up towards this 20,000 level. And this was yesterday's price, so the chances are that it probably pushed through 20,000 in the session in here today. But it's also just worth considering that 20,000 looks like the upper side of a 9-year base formation. And this has been a relatively orderly consolidation over the course of 2021 year to date. So if it can sustain a move above 20, then that will signal a return to medium-term demand dominance. But palladium is a byproduct of nickel mining, and if nickel can push on the upside here and sustain a move above the 20,000 level, well, then that's going to increase the supply of nickel, of palladium. When we then think about Sibanye Gold, well, I guess it's not called Sibanye Gold any longer, it's Sibanye Stillwater, and its strong performance has been on the back of the rising palladium price. So it's now also breaking on the downside here in line with palladium. And it might be a gold miner, and it might have a stronger balance sheet than was apparent back in the pandemic panic in early 2020, but it's certainly susceptible to lower palladium prices overall. And then just the other side of that equation, Norilsk Nickel is steady in the region of the trend mean. It's done exceptionally well from the strength of palladium, but it's also a nickel miner, and primarily a nickel miner. So the big question then is, will it sustain this breakout to new all-time highs? So we're still in a rather benign environment for industrial resources overall, and there is still a lot of speculation in the markets around ESG, and copper prices have rebounded from the 400 level. And there's a good reason why there's been a stronger tone on industrial resources in here today, and it's not just because China is reducing or attempting to reduce the cost of oil, which is a major input into the production cost of all commodities, but also that they've eased up some of the restrictions on China Evergrande. So even in the event that there is a default, or that the company eventually does go bankrupt and is completely denuded of all of its assets, it's looking increasingly likely that the Communist Party is going to try and limit the exposure of the economy to just that one developer. And they've already moved to, and this was old news, but they have bailed out Huarong, which was the bad bank that became an even worse bank, and then had to be bailed out a second time. Now, when we think about the Shanghai Property Index, well, China Evergrande's not in it, and it continues to bounce from the 5,000 level. And then the banking sector has been under pressure over the course of this year, but it is also steady. It's right in the region of the trend mean. It was a little softer in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. There is, of course, the potential that this common prosperity drive is just another jingoistic attempt to curry favor with the leftist portion of the Communist Party in an effort to shore up support for Xi ahead of the party congress next year, and amid his attempt to be reinstated for a third term. And that might be all it is. So, and I think that is certainly been the way that, or the ignominious way that China watchers have been looking at it, that it's all about politics and not necessarily about remaking the entire economy, which is why companies like JD have been able to break out and have held the move. So it's now consolidating in the region of the upper side of the range and has broken the downtrend. And Alibaba is certainly currying a lot of favor among the hedge fund community. The share was in negative territory today, but potentially this is another higher reaction low. So then the one that is being singled out though for opprobrium is Tencent. And these kinds of statements about computer games being cultural opium, but most particularly that the company with online gaming, it provides a communication network. So you can't stop people from talking. And that's obviously something that really is at the heart of some of the efforts to control the gaming sector. It's an additional communication network that is potentially subversive. And more than any other factor, that is probably weighing against Tencent. So the share, it was down really rather abruptly in here today. And that, I think, is capping the advance in the short term. It's quite likely to come back down and at least test the lows. So it's not like everything is all rosy, or that there isn't going to be a good deal of volatility in China, but it does suggest that we're in the trough of the credit cycle, and that this is a time when Some judicious bargain hunting on behalf of traders might be rewarded. I continue to think, though, that China is a trader's market. It's not an investor's market. Then, when we think about what's going on in Europe, well, Christine Lagarde announced tapering and then quickly said it was not tapering. So the market is obviously going to look at what the actions are. So the ECB is looking at reducing the number of bonds that they are buying, but they're still going to remain extraordinarily accommodative, and they anticipate continuing to be in the bond buying game for the medium term, simply that they're going to buy fewer of them. So when we look at the size of the ECB's balance sheet, it's up a lot. It's gone from 4.5 trillion in March of 2020 to 8.2. So it hasn't quite doubled, but it's not that far off it either. And the pace of the advance has not moderated. So that's probably all they're talking about, is moderating the pace of the advance, and the European economy continues to recover. Now, of course, there are still uncertainties regarding the Delta variant and how quickly it's going to peak, and how much of an ongoing threat it's going to be, and whether it will eventually be replaced with another version of the coronavirus. So these are all big uncertainties. But as long as the money continues to flow, and we're likely to remain in a reasonably benign economic environment. So we've seen a succession of central banks first announce tapering and then announce a slowing in the pace of their tapering. So they're going to elongate the amount of time it takes to get to zero purchases. And then we have the Federal Reserve, which is simply talking about tapering. Now, when we think about Europe, then it's another example of a trend that we've got a hugely commonality in the performance of stock markets. And this trend up off the lows in March of 2020 is rivetingly similar, and with only very small differences. So we still have the succession of higher reaction lows and ranges mostly one above another. The Euro Stoxx index has tended to dip down into the underlying ranges, but it is still pushing on the upside. And of course, it is somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean, but not terribly so. We can then think about the Australian index, and it has a more consistent trend, and it pulled back rather sharply in here today. So now it's testing the upper side of the most recent one of those trends. Well, the midpoint danger line is probably around 7,250. And if it takes that out, well, then that will be an inconsistency, and it would suggest a deeper process of consolidation and ranging. At the same time, it could quite easily rebound tomorrow. Now, then think about just how similar the trend on the S&P has been. And it's also a little softer in here today. And the ranges on the S&P have been getting progressively smaller. So it really hasn't looked like it's been ranging at all over the course of the last 2 months, because the size of the pullbacks have been so minor. And the market was in negative territory today again, so third consecutive day, but we're really only down about 20 or 30 points from the peak. We are heading into the middle of the month, and that's delivered a pullback on each of the last 4 months. So it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we might get a couple of extra days on the downside, because before the dip buyers start to come back in. So we're still in a benign environment overall, and there's a reticence among central banks to aggressively move. The last thing they want to do, having spent so much money already on ensuring that there is an economic recovery, is to endanger it. And we definitely saw that there was increasing appetite for government bonds in here today. So 10-year treasuries have come back down from the 1.4 level, and they're testing the sequence of higher reaction lows. And the German Bund has also eased back here. So we're still in negative territory, and a clear uptrend has yet to emerge. But this does look like a base formation. It's really only a question of how long it takes before bond yields start to continue to push higher. And then the 10-year gilt has inverse head and shoulders characteristics and was also a little softer in here. But it would really need to sustain a move below the 50 basis point level to question the potential for additional upside. So the UK has been less vocal in talking about extending a taper, and the pound was a little bit steadier in here today. Now it's been ranging below 120 versus the euro for the last 5 years, and this has been a very orderly consolidation over the course of 2021 so far. I don't think there's much appetite in the UK for a sharply stronger currency, but the price action does support the view that this is a consolidation in the region of the upper side of this base formation, so we'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the pound overall. And with the USA exhibiting a greater intent to have the weakest currency in the world, well, the dollar was a little bit softer in here today. It will, though, have to sustain a move below 92 to confirm a change of trend, because it has been consolidating above the trend mean, and as long as it's doing that, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, even if rationally it's just, I think it's obvious to expect that if they don't taper in an aggressive manner and they continue to beat the rest of the world in money printing, there isn't much reason for why the dollar should be strengthening, particularly versus the euro. So we're in an environment where stock markets are just holding on and really not doing much of anything. And I think a large part of it is because the awareness of weakness in the middle of the month has been something that's been deterring investors. And that very deterrence may even be ensuring that the slight bout of weakness occurs a little earlier, which is certainly what we're seeing in here over the last couple of days. And the gold price continues to hover here around the $1,800 area. So it wasn't quite able to hold its gain in here today. And the trend mean is holding around the 1800 level. So that's about the average price over the course of the last year. So gold really hasn't gone anywhere for a year. And it's been holding in this area. And we have the most recent dynamic is the big pop on the upside, where we have this very long candle on right in the region of the lows around $1,700. So at a minimum, that I think gives the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And the gold miners have been starting to at least give some evidence of steadiness around the 30 area, but they were down again in here today. And that's despite the fact that oil prices were a little softer, because obviously oil is a big input in terms of their cost of production. So now in order for the bull market to be sustained, then this area around the $30 level will have to hold. And that would suggest that we're likely to see some additional upside in the not so distant future. And any kind of strength, or particularly a move through the $1,800 area, which is held and improved upon, well, then that would act as a significant catalyst for additional upside in the gold mining sector. Then Bitcoin has been a little soft, excuse me, a little stronger in here today, up around $600. But that's not an especially dynamic move when it pulled back by more than 5,000 2 days ago. So It just looks like a little steadying. And we've certainly had a more impressive performance among the altcoins, and Ethereum continues to outperform. But we had such a large decline that it's likely to have a bounce. And we haven't had big dynamic moves, so it's not all that convincing. The problem is that the cryptocurrency market needs an additional bullish catalyst. They need a big source of new money to help to drive prices higher. So ETFs might be an answer to that, or massive additional new money printing might be an answer for that. The fact that there are plans by banks to offer a larger number of banks to offer Bitcoin services might be an answer, but they're not readily apparent. And we did have an awfully big decline in May, and we've had a lot of volatility and a complete lack of consistency creeping through since then. So it is a more risky environment overall, and certainly it is a trader's market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.